Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Roadshow.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Music Roadshow. We're so glad you're listening in with us.
Wow.
Tell you what. Those between hour changeouts are quite a workout.
Well,
sometimes.
we need to stop with the costume changes. I think
yeah,
that's
really.
What's slowing
that shirt
the whole
I was wearing
down.
Last hour would have been just fine.
Yeah. I know you're not Cher, okay?
Yeah.
You don't have to do this.
Darn it, I'm going to get it through my head one of these days.
Although you do look great in Bob Mackie.
Thank you.
Yes. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'd love for you to join in the conversation. Log on to facebook.com/TheMusicRoadShow and chat alongside with us.
That's true. And you can also hit us up on Twitter, which is @TheMusicRoadShow. And after the show, if you're so inclined, you can go hit us up at Instagram, @TheMusicRoadShow is the same thing right there.
Right.
All right, Scott, who do we got sitting here with us right now?
Okay, we are very, very excited to talk to Fred tonight. He has had an amazing discography with songs with artists like Tracy Lawrence, the Oak Ridge Boys, Randy Travis, gospel hits from the Isaacs, if I'm not mistaken, Americana hits with artists like Mary Gaucher and Mindy Smith. And to really what was one of the more polarizing country songs of 2014.
You're going to get there.
We're just going to hit it right
up. We're going to start there and there, the whole thing.
Jared Neiman's big old hit, Donkey. But, you know, so you think, you know, Randy Travis, he does it all. And he really, if you read up on him, he says that his childhood chore of carting manure in wheelbarrows kind of perfectly suited him for his career in the music business.
Yeah.
So that's going to be fun to talk about. We have a lot to cover. This is going to be a great hour. Fred Wilhelm, it's a pleasure to say welcome. Glad you're here. Welcome to the Music Roadshow.
Yeah.
Thank you. Woo! Very happy to be here.
Yeah, man.
I don't know much, but what I do, I'm happy to share.
Well, we'll take it. We'll take it.
Well, I'm just curious. You know, that quote that Scott mentioned about your life growing up on the farm, carting manure, that prepared you for the music business. How's that? How did it prepare you for the music business?
Well, you know, it's kind of a messy business. You don't know what you're going to step in or who you're going to step in it with from day to day. Matter of fact, I have a friend that I write with a lot. And when you're kind of on a vibe with something, he'll go, I smell what you're stepping in. And that's exactly it. But, you know, what I did learn seriously from, I grew up on a small farm in Connecticut, and my parents were incredibly hardworking people. And I learned, though they weren't necessarily big supporters of my music career, they taught me how to work hard. And they are the hardest working people I ever met. And, man, I grind it out. I write, you know, since I've had a publishing deal, which has been about 16 years, I've written between 100 and 130 songs every year.
Wow.
And some of them are good.
Wow. That's crazy. I mean, so what's the output there? Let's figure that out. So how many songs is that a day?
It's not, you know, when you think about it, like, this is your job. This is what I do every week. It's a couple songs a week. You know?
When you think about it that way, it's really not that many.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a lot.
Then why haven't we done it?
Well, you know. This job and other, you know.
There's other things, you know.
So let then, it go.
Yeah, let it go. Yeah, I wish I'd written that one. So then, on average, because we've asked other writers this too, with that kind of output, of those, which how many of those would you say you're proud
That's
of that you
question.
Think are great songs?
Proud of? Yeah, I tell people I work at about a 5% cut rate, 5 or 6% cut rate, which isn't great.
So out of 100?
Yeah, I'll get 5 or 6 cuts every year.
Okay.
So that's something.
Yeah.
You know, you know, cut rates and pride rates are two different things.
Right.
You know, I'm proud of most of my songs. I try not to write too many. You know, whenever I get done with one, I'm sure with you guys too, and probably everyone out there, when you're writing it, you think you're Einstein or Dylan. Mm-hmm. And it's the greatest thing ever.
Sure.
And then a week later, you've toned it down, and you know, by the end of the year, there's probably, you know, you make a CD of 20 songs.
Yeah.
That you love from that year, and that's kind of where I'm at.
You know, that's true, and we've talked about that with some people, because I wrote a song this week that I was like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing in the world. Today I started playing it and I'm going, whew, man, this kind of stinks. but there's people out there, and we know people because we've talked to them on the air and stuff, that as soon as they write it, they go and spend money demoing it, and it's like, man, that's maybe not the best idea.
You know, a little perspective is always great. But I also think, you know, in your defense, I think as writers, if you don't think it's the most amazing thing when you're in the middle of it, you're doing something wrong.
Right.
You
right.
know, because you need to be caught up in it. And I always look for that in my co-writes as well as my own work. Like, I want to feel energy. I want to be excited about what we're doing. Anybody comes into my studio and it's a grind, like, man, you've never had a real job. You
right.
know? I mean, I'm yeah. always happy just to be there doing it.
Right.
Right.
The process is the reward, and hopefully there's other rewards also, but I love doing it.
You said something real interesting a few minutes ago. Your parents were such hardworking folks. You were in college, mm-hmm. and did you finish college, or did you?
I did. I went to NYU
mm-hmm.
to the business school.
So uh-huh. you finished and said, there, now I'm going to go do music.
Well, yeah, I got, you know, my parents are, my dad grew up in the Depression, and they were, mm-hmm. you know, my mom is a German Jewish refugee, so they're very practical, pragmatic people. And they wanted me to get a real job, you know, as I'm sure everyone's parents do. And
mm-hmm.
you know, so I went to business school. I got out and I was playing in bands in New York at the time. And I got out of school and started working for a small advertising firm. And I was like, this sucks. There's no way I want to do this. You know, especially. Like probably every one of you guys too. Like, I said to myself, all right, well, I'm going to give the band 3 years or
right.
five, and that turns to 5 years, and then 10 years, if I haven't made it by the time I'm 30, and you know, lo and behold, you know, 20 some years later, you just keep going and going, and eventually you're here.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's so sad.
Well, let's talk about New York. I'd like to talk about the Astorians and the Rails,
oh my
those
gosh.
Years back
really?
In New York. Yeah. What was the music scene like then? And because you were
so far away from what I do now.
I know, but back then, I mean, you're playing music with the Psychedelic Furs, and you're
yeah.
in that
you
type
know,
of
was
group.
The highlight was because we did some dates with the Replacements.
Who oh,
really?
A huge fan of, man. I'm going out to meet some friends of mine to see them in L.A. on this reunion tour. So, you know, that was great. I mean, we were young and in college, and we jumped around a lot and had a lot of energy and drank a lot and, you know, all the things you're supposed to do in your 20s, I did, and it was really fun.
Yeah.
And I miss playing in a band sometimes, but not you know, I like my job a lot, the one I have now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't miss riding 10 hours in a van with a drummer so much.
Dang drummers.
Or however
with
long.
Their sticks.
So, but no, I just like my job now better. I've got a wife and kids here now, and you know, it's a great, and I get to do more music now than I'm writing than I did when I was playing and singing. And you know, as you'll find out soon, like I'm someone who kind of sings and can kind of play, but one of the things that when I started coming down to Nashville, it was so humbling for me to see the talent level that there is here. I mean, from someone who lived a long time in New York and also spent a good bit of time in Los Angeles, I'm telling you, the greatest talent in the world is in Nashville, Tennessee. The best musicians in the world are here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is staggering and humbling. And if you think you can sing and you think you can play, come down here and you'll learn that you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty
know,
quick,
I mean, there's
too.
Like there's a fastest gun getting up the stagecoach every day in this town. And so it was very humbling and also thrilling, you know, I mean, to be among this
right.
talent pool. It's like, it's inspiring.
Yeah.
Like, I hear a guy like Tyler just come in, sing that off the cuff, man.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. Well, and there's such a difference, you're right, between you can sing and being a singer. We've had people on the show that just sitting across from them and they get done singing and you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's oh. You're at a whole different level than being able to sing.
Yeah. And to work with those people, I mean, it's, you know, all you aspiring songwriters out there, it's the greatest thrill in the world to work with someone who can take something you're working on and, you know, bring it to life, make it color. It's incredible. Writing with a real singer allows me to do melodies, you know, anything I can dream of in my head, they can do. It's a thrill, you know. And similarly, when you go in to track something with a band here, you know, it's just staggering how good their vocabulary is ginormous. Anything you reference, man, I wish I had a little sort of Lindsey Buckingham lick there, yeah, a little couple knobs switches.
Or you could even get weirded.
Yeah.
Lindsey Buckingham playing AC/DC
yeah.
as if they were James Taylor, could you pull that off, you know? Sure.
But I mean, and all different, you know, strange references, you know, classic country references.
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, folks, just let me get this out of the way. I'm thrilled to be here. I listen to WSM. I was probably not all the time, but whenever I need to get refreshed on real country music, I come and drive and listen to WFM.
Sweet.
I'm familiar with its history, so it's a kind of an honor for me to be here. Thank you.
We're glad to have you here.
Well, speaking of country, was that in your DNA growing up, or is that something you developed later on?
Well, you know, my dad always had country music playing in the barn, and I spent a lot of time out in the barn, not out behind the barn, but out in the barn. And, you know, I grew up listening to more pop rock stuff, Cheap Trick and Queen and things like that.
Sure.
My lifestyle, you know, I grew up on a family farm. We were practically self-sufficient. We heated our house with wood. We raised all our own beef, chicken, eggs, butter, dairy, you know, everything we did ourselves.
Wow.
So I did 4-H. I showed cows at the fair. So I have a lot of country knowledge.
Sure.
Even though I didn't grow up listening to that music so much, except in the barn. Wasn't cool, at least in Connecticut, where I grew up at 12, to be a country music fan. But then when I rediscovered it, it was like, wow, this is great. And as a storyteller and a word nerd like I am, like, there's great, great, great country songs. Every day there's still great, great, great country songs. So I got very excited about it. And I made a point, part of my fondness for WSM is when I decided I wanted to do country music, I didn't want to be one of these guys who thought country music started with, you know, Rascal Flatts. I really wanted to understand it, and I went back and listened to a lot of old school country, and I love old school country. I wish I had more opportunities to write it, but I really appreciate that kind of music.
Not that there's anything wrong with Rascal Flatts. I mean, you had a Rascal Flatts cut, right?
That was my first cut, so I'm very, very grateful. And you know, please, nothing disparaging. Those guys are the greatest guys, and it's a great band. I just think people need to be familiar, you know.
Yeah.
Like in all genres, I want to know about early rock and roll. I want to, you know, I don't want to know just what's the current thing.
Yeah,
right. Wow, that's interesting. I'm still hung up on word nerd. I've never heard
I caught that too.
I'm like, oh, that's cool. I want a T-shirt that says word nerd.
I'm totally word nerd. Like I'm into the word part. I'm a person who really listens to lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I write country music.
Uh-huh.
Let's see here. We probably don't have time for this question, so let's talk
part one of the question.
Yeah. Why don't we just take a break and remind our listeners that this segment is brought to them by our friends at Toyota of Cool Springs.
That is true. Scott and I are both Toyota drivers. We proudly drive those cars, and we love going to that dealership for service and for all kinds of things, because it's just a great place to be. They do great work. And they're a great bunch of folks.
Well, not for all sorts of things.
If you're buying
a car.
If you need a prom dress, you probably don't
want
to
go there.
Toyota of Cool Springs. Right?
Why would you say prom dress?
I don't know. I was looking at you.
Yes, I know.
I'm thinking prom. I'm thinking sequins.
Right.
You know?
That's my life, folks, right there. Toyota of Cool Springs. Ask for George. Don't mention the sequins. He's going to take good care of you. On the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com.
That's right. We're here with hit songwriter Fred Wilhelm. We'll be back in just a few minutes on The Music Row Show.
You need to know about me before you let your sweetheart get into me. Why big events don't feel like home? Don't want to rock, I need a rolling stone. Gonna hold me, baby, just set me free.
Oh, yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Kelly Pickler doing Gypsy.
Little bit gypsy,
and that's co-written by our guest here this hour, Fred Wilhelm.
Yeah,
that's a great song. I like that
song.
Thank
you. Yeah, you know, it was kind of a thrill when she did that song. She did all the TV shows, you know, Ellen and the Late Show and all stuff.
Sure.
But the really cool thing was she sang it at the Macy's Parade on Thanksgiving, which was
nice.
Like, you know,
nice.
You grow up watching that, and then all of a sudden there's one of your songs on TV. So that was cool.
So before we get to Nashville, I just want to talk one more little bit of East Coast, if you don't mind.
Yeah, you're interested in this.
He's kind of obsessed, actually. Yeah.
No. I think the mark of success isn't how you get that first big lick or when things are going good, but it's how you handle those setbacks that are bound to happen in a music career. So you get a major deal as a duo.
Yeah.
And you...
Well, you know, we got a developer.
Okay, all right.
So, you know, we had a major label that gave us money to go and cut some sides.
Right.
We thought we were, you know, kind of
rock. You think you're on your way.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, anybody
I mean,
would.
Those are hard to get. That's sort of, you know, one of the things. You know, you work and sweat it out, and you play, you know, dives and all that sort of stuff. And eventually, you get a record label interest in you, and eventually they say they're going to spend some money on you. You feel
like you've made it. Get into that, Mike. Yeah, we want to hear you.
You feel like you're right on the path, and then you know you make it, and we did a few songs. It was fun. My partner Richard Pierce, great guitar player, lives here in town now, and we played our bit, and we had the rhythm section from Suzanne Vega's band was working with us, which was fun. And but the label said, we like it, but not enough.
So you're in your 20s. You know, I mean, how do you? What are you thinking as far as what that means to your career, and how did you regroup?
Well, you know, I mean, I only know one direction, and that's like ahead. Like I just plow, you know, and that's part of that work ethic I learned from my parents. Well, and sometimes I don't think it's always been to service to me to just like, you know, put my head down and push harder. But we just pressed on with the band in New York for quite a while. And I started coming to Nashville, and I had a friend who had a record deal down here that was going to cut some of the songs that I'd co-written. And we got to a certain place where, like, you know, it just didn't seem like it was going where we wanted it to go anymore, and we need to make some changes. And it seemed like all the most of the attention that the band got, I mean, I won a New York Music Award and stuff like that as a songwriter. And it just seemed like that was my real talent. You know, like we talked earlier about, I love singing, I love playing, but I'm not like Gary LaVox or some of these people that are down here.
Right.
And I just realized I should really focus on what I do best, which is writing. And I had an opportunity down here, and I came down here.
Was it an adjustment to going from recording artist to full-time songwriter?
Well, there was a lot of adjusting going on, but part of the adjusting was coming down and, you know, like anybody, you know, I had a record deal of sorts in New York, and we played some really good shows, and I'd won some awards, and I thought I was going to come over and conquer this town.
Dun, 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 dun.
And like
here I am, everybody.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, and like everybody else that comes here, you know, you need to put your time in, and you know, so I had to get a day job and write on in the evenings and afternoons and mornings and whenever I could, and sweat it out like everyone else for five, maybe 6 years. Before I got anything going here, and you know, and when I go back and listen to the songs I was writing then, it's like very apparent to me. At the time, I was like, "What? Why can't anyone sign me? Are you kidding me? Don't they know who I am?" And you know, and now I listen to those songs, and it's very obvious, you know, that I had a lot to learn, and I have to, you know, credit my first publishers like, and the Bluebird Cafe and places like that. I mean, Nashville is a place where you can, if you're willing to listen, you can learn all there is to know, and then some. So,
right.
I'm just curious, just from a technical, general standpoint, what was it that you saw in those old songs when you listen back versus, you know, what were they missing? What were they lacking versus the kind of stuff you're doing now?
You know, I think they were kind of precious. They weren't necessarily fun. They didn't have the choruses weren't terribly singable. You know, there's a lot of people that can write okay songs, and these are all okay songs. And, you know, with a rocking band and the right night, they probably sounded pretty great. But, I mean, it's really competitive in this field. I tell people all the time, there's way more NFL players than there are professional songwriters. Like, it's really difficult to crack the code and get established here. And you have to be, your game has to be good. And okay is not good enough, and those songs are okay, and I had to write those to write the ones that came after it. And just like, you know, as I said, I write a lot. I write every day, and some of them are just the one in between that gets the next song. Yeah. You know.
So your first cut in town is with an unknown band called Rascal Flatts that ended up doing pretty well with their debut album. But so when you found out you got that cut, what were your thoughts? Because at the time, I'm trying to think when that was. You're wanting to, you know.
Oh, I just wanted to get in the game. I was so thrilled to just ante up and get in.
Yeah.
They were not signed band at the time. They were working with Mark Bright, who's producing some sides and bringing them around. And I had been pitching songs and playing them for Kelly King over there at Mark's publishing company. And she liked that song and said, you know, I like that. And, you know, I want to play for Mark, if, you know, he might have some interest in it. If their boards are, if we get something going, would you be interested in sharing some of the publishing? And of course, I was.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, and I would advise, that's some advice I would give to new writers. I think when I was in New York, I really felt as an artist like I needed to hold on to everything. And, you know, in retrospect, I don't think that was so wise. I think, you know, like I said, you need to pay to play a little bit, ante up, share right. some, have some faith in yourself and that there's going to be others mm-hmm. along the way.
100% so, of nothing is.
Yeah,
zip. Nothing.
So, so anyways, Rascal, the guys cut it, and they went into the record label, I think with three songs, maybe four songs, and they got a record deal. And then they were talking about, what should we name the band? And they came back with, you know, Rascal Flatts, and I was like, oh, man. Rascal yeah. Flatts, who's going to buy that? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've said, I've done that where, like, you know, I've been 100% wrong, 180 in the wrong direction. Anyways, songs, the band did great. They're amazing. I saw Joe Don. The other day came up, you know, they're just great. I mean, if you've ever got to work with those are great guys. They love music. They remember everybody. They're so grateful to be where they are. Everything I've had to do with them has been a pleasure.
I've heard that from anybody who's worked with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're great. So getting that cut was what got me my first publishing deal. You know, kind of parlay that into a publishing deal. And then, you know, I haven't looked back.
So that first cut then, it opened, other than the publishing deal, what kind of other doors did it open up for you that it helped advance your career?
Well, I mean, I had like a single song deal for that mm-hmm. song, but then I kind of worked that into a whole publishing deal where okay. I was, you know, signed writer. And then, you know, then I didn't have to work a day job. And I'm
okay,
writing
you were able
day.
To quit the day job?
Yeah, and I'm
what
writing
was the day job?
And here I was working as a kind of an administrative assistant, you might call it, mm-hmm. for an insurance company.
Oh, nice. Wow. Yes. Mind-numbing.
Nice. You know, I'm...
Actually, I need a quote.
yeah. about that I do, as a matter of fact.
I've always been grateful to have work.
So, sure, yeah,
so
absolutely.
It got me here. But, yeah, and then, you know, there's been times in between deals where I've had to go back and do things. I always tell, I have a Faith Hill cut, and I had lost my first publishing deal and hadn't gotten my second publishing deal yet. Is that right? Yeah. And I was literally digging an irrigation ditch the day that Faith cut that song, and I got wow. the phone call. So... You know, it's just part of our story.
Yeah.
How bad do you want it?
Isn't that funny, though? And you're thinking, Faith Hill's cutting my song. Yeah. While you're thinking, I'm so glamorous right now, you know?
Who was it? Somebody was telling us that they were actually working in a garage as a mechanic when their song was number one. And, you know, none of the checks had come in yet, so he was still working at the garage.
Yeah. Oh, no, that was Gene Watson.
Yes, that's right, yeah. Gene Watson.
Wow. And he still...
He still has a garage.
He still has that garage. Yeah. He still works it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a body shop.
But
I'm not
can you
mistaken.
Imagine what that must be like? You're working away, and yeah, I got a number one song. You know?
Wow. Yeah, sure you do. Sure you do.
Well, you're not plugged in yet, are you?
No. Can you grab his guitar, Lisa?
We'd love to have a song from you. Let's hear one of these great compositions that you're talking about.
All right. Hey,
that's a beautiful guitar, by the way.
You can plug into that right there.
Oh.
Look at that. We're all set up here.
Is this going to make a loud punchy click sound?
Nah.
Nope.
There we go.
Cool.
One more thing here.
Beautiful.
Tuner and everything. I hope it's okay. Hey, while I'm here, I told my wife and kids, I have a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, Oscar and Augie, I think, are tuning in, so I wanted to say hi to them.
Hey, Oscar. Hey, Augie.
And
thanks for listening.
I wanted to send a shout-out to my friend Hannah Pike, who is in the hospital up in Ohio. I just wanted to know we're thinking about her. Okay, so here's a song. I wrote this song with my friend Kyle Jacobs.
Okay.
It was recorded by Randy Travis, which is really cool because he's one of the guys that, you know, I like to help get me to Nashville. Some of those songs were like, I love that, and I want to try and be part of that. We wrote the song about, I wrote about my wife, and he wrote it about his girlfriend at the time, who is now Kelly Pickler, who was Kelly Pickler then, but it's now his wife.
His wife, yeah.
Yeah.
She was always Kelly Pickler.
Yeah.
But anyways, we wrote the song about our significant others, and the idea of it was, you know, that when you finally find that person that you've been looking for, you say, oh my gosh, how did this person slip through someone else's hands. So what were they thinking? And that was kind of the idea behind it. So I'll try and play it for you as best I can. It's called Someone You Never Knew. She's stubborn as a stone, got a mind of her own. She'll cuss without blinking an eye. If you dare to begin it, she'll fight to the finish. It's best not to even try. Silly than serious, a little mysterious, no telling what she'll say or do. With the soul of a poet, you wouldn't know it, she's someone you never knew. She was in your arms, but you never held her, a treasure you let slip away. Oh, in all of those years, you didn't see her, she was right there in front of your face. She's a rose, she's a thorn, she's the eye of a storm, she's the night you don't want to sleep through. And she loves to be loved, but to you she was just someone you never knew. Yeah, she was in your arms, but you never held her, a treasure you just threw away. Oh, in all of those years, you didn't see her, she was right there in front of your face. Now I know why she smiles, I know why she cries when she's lying or telling the truth. She's my soul, she's my flame, but to you she'll remain someone you never knew. Just someone you never knew.
Over here.
Woo!
Very
that's
nice.
Very nice. Well, that's thank actually you. A perfect place to take a break. We're going to be back with a whole lot more Fred Wilhelm here on the Music Row Show. So come on back.
Sounds like a scene from the silver screen. Yeah, that's how it was. Love doesn't always look like a picture-perfect storybook, but sometimes it does.
Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Rascal Flatts. Way back from their debut CD. That's a song called Long, Slow, Beautiful Dance, co-written by our guest here this hour, Fred Wilhelm.
Yep.
That's a great tune.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was, like I said, a thrill and kind of my entree into the business.
Entree?
Is that a word? Well, you know.
Look at you breaking out the French.
Well, you know.
Wow.
I saw it in the window and looked nice.
let's talk about the actual writing process. Are you a gibberish writer with lyrics? Or I've seen some co-writes where maybe you're with some people that are gibberish writers. Talk about that. Do you do it, and how does it help the process?
I don't think I am a gibberish writer.
No.
I do a thing I refer to as, I do a thing called daisy chain of thought.
Oh, what's that? Yeah. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I know. You'd like the daisy chain part. it starts with, I just sort of link lines together. I start writing, and I often warn my co-writer, look, you know, there's a couple of things you should know before we start. This is our first write. One is, I'm going to say a lot of stupid things. That's just, so plow through it, pick through it, and help me. And the other thing I do is sometimes I kind of go into this sort of little Fred world where I'm staring into my screen and you think I'm ignoring you and I'm kind of zoning out for 10, 15 minutes clicking away. And it seems, I want you to know that, you know, I'm not trying to be exclude you or anything like that. It's just kind of my process. And I start writing and I write lines and then I start writing, you know, just kind of connecting to the next rhyme. I'm really into rhymes. I love rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
And, And then I'll be like, all right, well, here's a verse. What do you think of this? And it'll be like, often I'll throw out a whole chunk, and you know, it may not be great, but it's like, now I've got something for us all to whittle
on. To start picking apart.
And do it. But that's kind of my process. And then, but I know there are people, as far as gibberish, lots of times, like when I'm writing with a singer, they hear sounds, like vowel sounds at certain mm-hmm. points in a melody. And then I'm like, oh, what word is sound in that? You know, what word goes with that sound that makes sense with our idea?
Right.
It's fun.
Right. I want to get back into that daisy chain of thoughts. Mm-hmm. No, really, guys, grow up. can you give an example? Because you say you just start stringing a bunch of words together.
Well, you know, not like, you know, for like donkey, you know, that's, okay. I'm not sure if I can remember it well enough, but there's a lot of tight little rhymes.
Mm-hmm. There are.
In it, and, you know, you just start going, you know, I can just start going there, and eventually it leads me somewhere. And then I'd be like, is this taking us to the direction? Even if I don't have the hook of the song yet, if we have like just start off, chase, rhyme, and see where it takes you, lots of times it ends up just because my mind is kind of bent that way, I guess. Mm-hmm. It ends up going someplace, you know, unusual.
So just kind of free association then. You just kind of keep rhyming things.
Well, I mean, it's not like, you know, boy toys, that sort of thing.
No, yeah. No. It's like erudite and socialite or that kind of thing. I mean, very sophisticated words is what you're...
But, you know, like we're writing, you know, we got this idea called
really
donkey.
Really erudite? What's wrong with you? It's the exact same thing as boy and toy. Go ahead.
But just, you know, that... usually I have some sort of idea, a rough idea of what the song is about, you know, whether it's a love song or something. And I'll start with and the first line of a song is very important to me. Like I want to start off with something that's not, you know, that's interesting, you know, that holds your attention a little bit. And then like, where would I go from there? You know, like on the the donkey thing came flying out pretty fast. And it was, you know, these guys start singing this chorus, donkey, donkey, ride that donkey. I'm like, well, you know, why would you ride donkey? And then we came up with that idea. I was like, George Jones took a John Deere tractor. My donkey gets there faster. You know, yeah. When I pull up the pickup trucks, jockeys break out in laughter. Ladies think it's cool. I kick it with a mule. You know, and it just kind of like go where it goes and it ends up going somewhere.
Yeah.
It goes where it goes until it goes somewhere. I love that. So you brought it up now. We've talked about it now for the last few minutes. Tell us the story about riding donkey and how that thing got cut.
Well, I have to give, you know, I was riding with Kyle Jacobs and Detox, David Tolliver from Halfway to Hazard. And we'd already written a song and we were just goofing around. And Detox started doing this, ride that donkey, donkey thing. And everyone, and I will confess that we had been drinking perhaps a little bit. It's another great perk
we won't
of
tell
my
anyone.
Job.
We won't tell anybody.
But anyways, you know, some people came in like, what is that? And, you know, I thought it was just a crazy joke, but it was kind of fun. And but then later on, Detox was like, and, you know, I got to give Detox too. Detox is the guy that does those hee-haw sounds. Okay. And he was doing them in the room. We're all cracking
You're
up.
Laughing.
Yeah. And having a good time. And someone shot a little YouTube video of us. Ah, this is hysterical. And then they emailed me like, Fred, we got to finish that donkey song. I was like, are you kidding me? For real? Like, I thought we were just... So, okay. And, you know, so next time we got together, we, you know, just did it. And they made a little demo of it. And, you know, it's one of those songs that is, you know, whether you like it or hate it, and plenty of people liked it and plenty of people hated it, but it does grab your attention. And,
absolutely.
And I guess they got it to Jared Neiman. He played it on the headed on the bus, and people kept going like, what is that? You know, so he decided, you know, I'll give him a lot of credit for having the stones to go ahead and cut that song. And they knocked it out of the park. They did a great version of it. It was really fun. I saw him play it at the Ryman, and I've seen people line dancing to it. It's nice. Like, you know, for the people that love it, they love it.
Yeah. Right. Well, I understand that you guys really paid more attention than usual to the demo of that song and really did the production up. Talk about that, and then how did the finished product match up
in truth be told, like the demo process and that really, Kyle Jacobs is a guy, and you know, he's a produced song of the year last year. I mean, he's really gifted in that department. He mm-hmm. really worked on it with his partner, Matt McClure, his engineer and producing partner, and they sweated it, and it sounded great. And there's some differences, but pretty much, you know, there's a lot of similarities between the two versions. Jared's version did a lot more stuff with background vocals, which were really cool that I loved on there. So
did they bring in the original hee-haw?
The David Tolliver Detox had to come in to do the hee-haw, and apparently there's a story about it that I read where you know, Jared and Detox are pals, and like, you gotta come in the studio tomorrow to do the hee-haws, and you know, he's supposed to be there 10 or whatever, and noon he's not there, and they're calling, and you know, Detox probably had a very long, rough night the night before, and he's like, for real? Like, you know, you know, it's half hung over, and he ran over and did him, and now they're, you know.
Yeah.
They're in the annals of country music history.
Exactly. Awesome. That's awesome.
Let's take a break. We're going to be back with more of Fred Wilhelm. You're listening to the Music Row Show. Stick around.
That don't mean it's over. I got a dime to a cooler, it's styrofoam, and it's loaded with limes and Coca-Ronas. I'm pulling my truck toward Pensacola, but before I go, I had the phone you say, hey, sugar shotgun.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. That's Why Wait for Summer, which we can all appreciate right about now. That's Walker Hayes.
Yep.
Co-written by our guest here this hour, Fred Wilhelm. And that actually, we were talking during the break about song placements, and what we were talking about last hour, you actually had a song placed in a movie called Oxygen, called Beneath, and Beneath, you got another one coming up, don't you?
Yeah, I've done, you know, I've had some good luck with that. I just recently found out I have a song that I wrote with a Nashvilleian, a great musician named Matthew Perriman Jones. I don't know if any of you guys.
No,
he's become a good friend of mine, and we've been writing some, and, you know, his stuff is very introspective, and as a writer, it's great. Like, I get to, you know, I get to write those kinds of heavier songs that demand you know, more attention than drive time attention, and which is great. I like to stir all the different pots. You know, I try and write a lot of different kinds of music, and some for all different kinds of people, because it helps keep it interesting. If you're going to write a lot, you got to write a lot of different kinds of stuff.
I'm going to put the brakes on you a minute here, because I talk a little bit more about that. What's, when you're saying there's a difference in writing something really deep and introspective, and or writing something that's drive time, you're thinking, well, drive time, because that's important for writers and maybe don't understand.
I know,
but
I don't want to make it sound like I'm belittling drive time stuff, because there's some great beautiful songs and some stuff that'll move you to tears and drive time too. I don't want to say that, but you know, there's all different kind of genres of music, and there's some, you know, that is definitely headphone music, which is stuff that you're you know, very very lyric driven, and people, it's a different kind of song. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all different kinds of songs I like to write. I have some, you know, I've done some gospel Christian stuff, done some Americana stuff. I've done some indie art. You know, my background is like as an indie rock guy before I moved here.
Yeah.
I love rap music. I love doing tight rhymey stuff. So, you know, I try and stir all the pots. So that's how you, you know, keep interested in it. I'm not trying to write the same song I wrote yesterday.
I watched a video of you at the Bluebird from 2009. Speaking of tight video, kind of rappy, and you were kind of a sort of, seems like you were sort of ahead of the curve as far as incorporating that rap style lyric into a country song. So what did you see in the market that kind of led you in that direction?
Oh, I didn't, you know, I mean, I wish I could say I was that smart. You know, I don't have any sense about what the market wants. I just sort of do, you know, what I was doing rap because I went to school in New York, and, you know, I ran around and I saw rap, and I thought it was cool, and I liked the, and as a, you know, self-professed word nerd, you know, I love the format that I can be as freestyle with my rhymes, and, you know, I love when the rhymes don't just come at the end of the line, but they come in the middle, mm-hmm. and you know, the phrasing drifts over, and it's really fun, and so I just wanted to do it because it was fun, you know, and that's why I started mixing that kind of vernacular into some of my songs. But it was, you know,
it's hard to do. Seems like it would be, you know, some people look down on it and say that it's, you know, not very artistic, but it's hard to do.
It's
that kind of thing, and I love that kind of thing.
It's
because
fun,
because
it's less, you know, for, especially when I mean, I, you guys know I love traditional country music, but I love the new stuff too. I love that it surprises me when I hear the words that I haven't heard 100 times, or the Ron Paul in a different place. And that guy who just played, Walker Hayes, I mean, he's great at that stuff. He's very rappy, and you know, he had a record deal on Capitol that was and it was probably just a couple years ahead of where it should be, because now everyone's doing that sort of tight rhyming thing. We had a song we wrote called Busta Rhymes, make me work. How I can't even think of it. It's like, but it was very, very rappy, and we ended up with a. It's called White Boy.
Okay.
It was all, make me a make a white boy at Busta Rhyme was the hook of it, and it had all these rhymes in it, and it was pretty fun. So yeah, he's somebody is, and he's still doing that, and I think he'll probably get another shot with his music. He's so good at it, what he does.
Very cool.
I love that.
Okay, we got a few minutes here. If college student, business college student, Fred Wilhelm.
Yeah, that guy?
That guy.
You could, remember him?
Could look in a crystal ball and see the last few decades of your life making music. What would he be most surprised about, and what was his idea of music success when he started in music?
Wow. Well, I mean, first of all, he'd be. I never foresaw myself coming to Nashville. You know, yeah. That kind of crept up on me. But I've been here a long time. I've been here, you know, 20 years. It creeps up on you once you get down here. And I also would tell, you know, various songwriters, you know, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. Like, to, if you want to, you got to be in it to win it, you know, mm-hmm. and it's here. So that was I'm glad I came down here, but I would never have expected that. But in some ways, you know, my definition of success hasn't changed that much. Like, I didn't know I'd be writing songs for a living. I thought I'd be playing in a alt rock band or something like that. But what my goal has always been, like, to avoid a day job. No, my goal has really been to, my goal has been to make a living, doing something I love and feel passionate about.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've been doing a long time, and I still, you know, I genuinely can't wait to get to work. There's few things I'd rather do than go to work. Like, I love the process. I love the people. Yeah, I feel privileged to get to do it, and so yeah, that's success. I tell people, if you go to work you love and come home to someone you love, that's a game, kind of, to me.
That's
right?
True.
So mm-hmm. I'm feeling very blessed.
And probably on the whole, there's not a lot of people that can say they love their job that much. So that's a great thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I hope there's more people. A lot of people can say that. You know, some of it is just the perspective you bring to it.
Sure.
You know, I'm not going to say, like, there aren't days where it can be a grind or like, but 90% of the time I love doing it. I like the process, you know, mm-hmm. even when it's not, someone you never knew that I played earlier was like a song really came from the heart and it meant a lot to me. And I'm really proud of it. But there's other songs where it's like, you know, I'm looking at something you gave me called Gift Certificate. If we need to write a song called Gift Certificate, I like the puzzle.
Yeah.
I like those.
How
Sudoku.
Can you make that work?
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, what angle on it is, how do you do it? It's fun. So I feel very lucky to get to do it every day.
Well, we have 3 minutes. Let's write Gift Certificate.
Right, it's funny. He was actually reaching for his guitar. He was going to do it.
It'll take a little more than 3 minutes.
Maybe 3.5, you know? Oh, that's funny. That who was we had years ago? Tim Buppert was on the show, and he had a dry spot, and they wrote a song called Deep Heat and Penetrating Pain Relief, because that's what the ad that was open in the Sunday paper that was sitting on the floor for some ointment of some type, and it was a great song, actually.
Yeah,
you know?
So there you go.
So you never know where stuff comes from. It could
and sometimes, you know, you just grind it out, and it ends up being...
Yeah.
And you know, I'll tell you this, true. Even when it is like a more of a puzzle, you find out your heart creeps into it. You know, like... There's no way to write a song and not put some of yourself into it, at least for me. Like, and I even if I'm writing Gift Certificate, there's going to be something in there that I want to say. Sometimes I don't even know what I want to say until the song is done. I mean, I think a lot of songwriters probably start out that way. You know, I know I did, was writing songs because I had things I wanted to say that I probably didn't have the courage or mm-hmm. know how to say directly.
Right.
And so I was up in my... you know, bedroom at home, playing an island string guitar, making stuff up. And, you know, that's how it starts off, as kind of therapy. And then it kind of keeps going that way a little bit.
Sweet. Sweet. Well, that's awesome. Well, we thank you so much for coming and hanging. Where can people find out more about you?
Well, I have a website, fredwilhelm.com, though my wife told me, man, we need to update that before you get on the show, and we didn't do that yet. So if you go check in, make sure you check in again in a week. And I'm on Facebook, and I'm on Twitter. I think I'm on Twitter as The Fred.
Yeah, yes.
Because there was another Fred Wilhelm. And I think there's a Fred Wilhelm in town, an attorney, a music attorney you might want to have.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We should have had them both on the same show. Yeah, that would have been awesome.
It's the Fred Show.
Well, thanks again, and you know, looking forward to lots of great things.
Thank
and
you so much.
And,
And we're going to Belfast again.
That's
we're
right.
Kind
we're
of
going
excited.
To Ireland. We're going to be interviewing some great people over there. So stay tuned for that. Definitely check. You can find out all the details at themusicrowshow.com. And, of course, you can hit us up on Facebook and Twitter and all those great places. So we will see you again real soon here on The Music Row Show.